Hi, this is Jim Armstrong, and today we are doing the fourth module, Testimonials and Referrals, and I'm really happy to have Bob Berg, the author of Endless Referrals, with us, and we're going to be discussing how to use the Endless Referral System to gain high-end clients and recession-proof your business. But before we have Bob come on the line, we have Inner Circle member David Koshin on the call, and he's had some great success with the Testimonial and Referral System that's included in the Rapid Launch. David, welcome to the call, and thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Well, David, for a few months, you were trying to implement the Testimonial and Referral System in your business, and it just wasn't happening. So tell us what was going on there.
Well, we would send out the gift baskets and out to the customer, and the salesman would go out, and they would always come back and have excuses why they didn't have the referral sheets, why we didn't get a referral or why we didn't even get a testimonial. They would fill it back in, they would mail it in, and I just couldn't understand why the salespeople just wouldn't bring this back to me.
Okay. And so you weren't getting, obviously you weren't getting the results you were hoping for, and it just, you weren't getting the testimonials and referrals like you should have been.
Correct.
Okay. So what we did a while back, we did a coaching call called The Three Deadly Mistakes That Will Destroy Your Ability to Succeed with My Systems. And deadly mistake number three is employee sabotage. And that can be either refusing to do a strategy or not doing it according to the system. And you were experiencing a lot of that firsthand. So tell us what you did about that, David.
Well, what I finally did is had a sales meeting with the men, and I explained to them, did the coaching, and explained to them how easy it was to ask for a referral. If the customer didn't want to write it down, they could ask the questions, simply jot it down, repeat back to the customer, this is what you said, and can I put this in writing? And I didn't see why it was so difficult for this to be done, so I finally got upset, and I just said, no testimonial, no referral, no paycheck. And I really don't like to mess with people's money, but the point was that I wanted to show them how serious I was about this. So Friday rolled around on that particular week, and there was no paychecks. One salesman come up to me and asked about this, and I told him, where's his paperwork, where are my referrals? And he didn't have any answers. He goes, well, I can't go home without a paycheck given to my wife. I said, well, have your wife call me. So
right.
I stayed at the store purposely, and his wife called me. And I explained to her why he didn't receive the paycheck. And she wanted to know what kind of paperwork it was. And I explained to her, just simply, the man did a good job. All we wanted is in writing exactly if the customer was happy or not happy with the service, and bring it back to me. And she says, well, that's it? And I said, yeah, that's it. And he came to work Monday, and he was gone for just about all day Monday. He had gone back and seen every customer the past 2 weeks and brought a whole stack of referrals and testimonials to me and found out how easy it was. Now, what she said to him, I don't know.
You probably don't want to know.
I don't want to know, but it worked. I mean, it was just, and, you know, it was great. It was such a pat on the back, and, you know, they had, and they found out how easy it actually was, and all you have to do is ask. And a lot of customers will get it. All you have to do is just ask for it.
You know, David, you said two key things that stand out. First of all, you talked about, you know, where they wanted to know where their money was. Well, the thing is what we're talking about here is revenue or money for your business, and them being able to take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and make that revenue happen. So that's one point. The other is that it was a mental hang up that they just had to overcome. Kind of like diving off the high dive for the first time. You know, it's scary, you're not used to it, then you see after you do it once, hey, this isn't so bad. In fact, it's kind of fun. So getting them over that psychological barrier, I think, was a big key, David. So you got your sales team on board. Did they all get on board? Are you getting testimonials and referrals from all of them now?
Every single one, because I simply say the same thing. don't bring back the pink sheet, don't come back to work. I mean, I'm dead serious about this.
Okay.
And I'll explain to that in just a second why it is so important.
Okay.
But I do tell each one of them, bring it back. And they do, and they come in with a smile on their face, handing it to my wife and I. And it's unbelievable what some of the customers write about the business and the sales.
There you go. There you go. So it's turned. It really has. Something that I've said before, David, is the referral system takes getting referrals and turns it from a happy accident into something that's part of the process, like ordering the flooring materials, scheduling the installation, you get the testimonials and referrals, and that sounds like what's been happening with your store.
Right.
Okay. Now, after everybody got on board, what happened to your gross revenue as a result?
Well, the following month, we increased our sales by $90,463. And I attribute all of that really to the referral system. We did $37,000 in commercial that month, which came from the referral from a customer that was a friend of a contractor that received the fourth room free. And the contractor phoned me and says, well, can I get a fourth room free? Well, yeah, we'll work it out. So we got a $37,000 job on that. It came to an 8% what we would normally have charged that we got. So I look at that as free money coming in. Retail, we did 53,463 on that. $22,372 came directly from the referral system from customers that that had referred clients, which we called and were able to schedule jobs for them. And then $31,091 was from new business for that month.
Fantastic, David. What a testament to, you know, the everybody on this call has invested in becoming an Inner Circle member so that they can obviously increase their revenue. That's half of the coaching. The other half is creating that freedom and walkaway power. But, you know, you invest that time, energy, and money into the coaching program, you can't allow your own team, who you're trying to help make more money to, you can't allow them to sabotage your efforts. And David, this, you've just given us a powerful example and a great way to motivate some people who just, you know, are dragging their feet about getting on board. And so that's fantastic. Now, what advice would you have to anyone listening who is having trouble getting their sales team on board?
Well, each person is going to have to be different. You just have to get the men motivated and understand why they're doing this. And I'll explain, this came out in the newspaper about 2 weeks ago, is about contractors that have ripped customers off about not completing the jobs. Don't pay contractors up front, and you know that's one of my things that I do here, Jim, is I collect all of my money up front before we do the job.
You get 100%
I get 100% up front. And, of course, when a salesman brought it to me, he says, well, what are we supposed to do about this? And I says, well, what do you mean? And he says, well, we're going to have a hard time trying to, since they're doing, they do this about once a year, you know, and it always makes a salesperson a little nervous.
You're talking about the local paper running a story about fraudulent contractors.
Exactly. And, of course, the key one was about a carpet store, you know, right there, that they didn't come back and fix a problem.
Okay.
And I said, and he had asked me about that. I said, well, where's our referral booklet? I said, what you do is you hand that to the customer. They have an objection about paying you, we'll do this. And you have... And they just look at it, and they go through that. And
you talk about the testimonials.
About the testimonials.
Okay.
And they go through the booklet, and I said, that should just quiet it down right there. I mean, you have, well, here's one I just received yesterday. It's just, and you have this, and how can a customer not pay you? I was so pleased that I had the estimate on Tuesday and the floor done on Thursday. It was the best service from any flooring place I have ever received. Our salesman, Patrick, was so helpful and always available if I had any questions throughout the process. I will definitely tell others to buy from you guys. Thanks for everything, Carrie Shoemaker. But if you have all these in your book and there's a problem, most, 90% of these customers, we ask if we have a customer that has a problem or something, can they call you? And most of them say yes. So that kind of answered that question. And we haven't run into a problem collecting 100% up front with this system.
That testimonial was powerful, and you're gathering them up now. They're just coming in off virtually every job. And you're absolutely right, David. You get the when people, anyone listening to this, you get where there's a, you know, we get the same thing in our area. Articles written about, you know, beware of unscrupulous contractors. That you guys should be dancing in the streets when they run a story like that. And here's a little tip, David. You may not be doing this, but take that article and make reprints of it. Have somebody in your store who's savvy with Word or Publisher. What you can do is scan the logo of the newspaper, put it in at the top of the page, and then type in the entire article so it's like a reprint, and begin to include that with a cover letter. Send it out in your newsletter. Say, hey, here's, you know, beware. You're the good guy. You're saying, you know, watch out for these people. And then, of course, you got testimonials in there. You can put it into your you know, in the consumer's guide to floor covering. So just a little tip there. Whenever there's bad publicity, turn it around, take those lemons and make lemonade out of it, and make yourself the good guy. And I know you're already doing that by using the testimonials does that. But David, that's fantastic. Thank you for coming on and sharing with us.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right. Okay, now we're going to go ahead and bring Bob Berg on the line. Bob is the author of Endless Referrals and The Go-Giver, and Endless Referrals has sold over 175,000 copies, and The Go-Giver is Bob's fourth book to sell over 100,000 copies. And, you know, I've got my copy of Endless Referrals sitting right here. That thing is dog-eared. It's highlighted. It's full of Post-it notes. It's literally a toolbox with tons of hands-on strategies that you can use for networking and referrals. There's no fluff, no theory. It's stuff you can. It's been used in the trenches. I use these techniques in there. Bob also speaks for corporations and associations nationally, including Fortune 500 companies, and he's shared the platform with Zig Ziglar, Robert Kiyosaki, Brian Tracy, Mark Victor Hansen, Larry King, and others. Bob, welcome to the call, and thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jim. It's great to be here, and I congratulate David for all his success. You know, it's really neat to know that when you have a system like you have, that people are following it and actually applying the information. When they do, the results are very predictable. I always talk about it, a system, and defining a system as the process of predictably achieving a goal based on a logical and specific set of how-to principles, which is obviously what you teach. And it sounds like David just followed it to the letter, and he got very predictable results.
Yep. Doing great, and you're right, and we're all about systems in the Inner Circle Club, and I know you are too, Bob. You quote Michael Gerber, author of The E-Myth, and of course he's a systems guru, mm-hmm. So definitely on the same page there. The topic of today's call is using the Endless Referral System to gain high-end clients and recession-proof your business. So let's just start, Bob, by reviewing the Endless Referral System and then talk about how it's critical for gaining those high-end clients and bulletproofing your flooring store against the ups and downs of the economy. So first, tell us what the purpose of the Endless Referral System is that you developed.
Sure. The system itself is simply a way for people who are really good at what they do. They're what Michael Gerber, referring back to him for a moment, would call technicians. People who have a love for what they're doing, people who enjoy what they're doing. They're good at what they're doing, but they may not feel as though their biggest strength is the marketing of what they're doing. And the fact is, we have to be able to market ourselves. You know, one of my favorite philosophers was Ralph Waldo Emerson, and I think his writings are terrific, but one of his most famous sayings is perhaps the only one with which I disagree, and I bet you do too. And to paraphrase the end of this saying, it was, the person who builds the better mousetrap can sit back and wait, because the world will beat a path to his door. Now, I don't know what it was like in his day. It may have been different then, but if you're, you know, you can have the best flooring store in the world, but if you sit back and wait, now you will have people beating a path to your door, but those people will be bill collectors. So we've got to be able to go out there and actually make things happen, get people to know who we are and develop those relationships. And yet, you know, people, a lot of times that's just not a strength of theirs. So what I've been able to do over the years, really through learning from a lot of other people, is, and you know, because I really haven't had a whole lot, if any, original thoughts in my life, Jim, but I've been really good at learning from others, applying the information myself, and then being able to duplicate systems so that anybody else can do the same. And so that's really why I put this together, so that the technicians who don't want to consider themselves salespeople or marketers, so they can go out there with confidence and just develop a never-ending list of new, high-quality A-list prospects.
There we go. And, you know, you said something, you know, not having an original thought. I would disagree with that, Bob, but, you know, I really respect what you've done and what you teach. But, you know, King Solomon himself said that there's nothing new under the sun.
Right on.
So what we're doing is teaching principles
exactly.
That are universal, that will work in any business. And, you know, the flooring business is certainly no exception. And, you know, the system is built around your system, around the concept of networking, but networking is misunderstood by a lot of people. Can't it be interpreted in many different ways?
Well, yes, and that's why it's always important to define terms when you're talking about something, especially a term like networking, where so many people use the word and really don't have a clue, if you will, as to what it is. Because so many people think of networking as that stereotypical, you know, networking sales guy, the guy who kind of glad hands and back hands and slaps hands and shakes hands. He works the crowd and says things like, hey, how you doing? Give me a call. You know, let's do lunch and all that. And you know, if I can ever sell you which amuzi, feel free to call any time, any day, any way, any place, anyhow. And you know, of course, that's not networking. When I define networking, I simply define it as the cultivating of mutually beneficial, give and take win-win relationships. When done correctly, when done with a genuine caring about the other person, their wants, their needs, their desires, and of course when following a specific system, you'll absolutely turbocharge and accelerate your referral business.
Fantastic. And the important thing, and you emphasized it, was give. You're leading with the giving hand, and that's something I definitely believe in.
Well, you're shifting focus a little bit. You know, when we talk about the book, The Go-Giver, and we kind of wrote it for that reason, John David Mann and I did, it's simply really nothing more than that, than saying that shifting one's focus from getting to giving, meaning in this case, constantly and consistently adding value to people's lives, is not only a nice way to live life, but it's actually a very profitable way to live as well.
I agree. What's the golden rule of networking, and how does it apply towards gaining affluent clients?
Well, this is actually very simple, Jim, and so important. The golden rule, what I call the golden rule of networking, is simply this. All things being equal, people will do business with and refer business to those people they know, like, and trust. It all comes down to that. And the goal is to develop relationships with people to the point that they feel so good about you. They know you. They like you. They trust you. They want to see you succeed. They want to help you find new business. They want to be a part of your life. So thus they will open up their world to you. And to do this with people so that that along the lines you also have what we call personal walking ambassadors. You've got an army of people who are actually out there singing your praises, who feel a personal investment in your success.
Okay. Now, you've got a very specific system for networking and creating endless referrals. Explain how this works and how it can be used to gain the high-end clients and recession-proof your business.
Well, really, it's simply a matter of meeting new people and being able to establish, develop, and cultivate relationships with them in a way that's very, very comfortable, both for you and for them. And the neat thing is you can do this whether you're working a particular niche, whether you're working, you know, just with high-end people, whether you're working with the it really doesn't matter. You decide that. But remember that when you meet people, you know, that person, they themselves may be a prospect, or they may know a lot of other people who could be. So we don't want to look at people just as one person. We want to look at them as possible connectors for a whole a bunch of business. And so regardless of who we're speaking with, and let's say we are speaking with someone who may, you know, may or may not be an affluent person, they may be, but it's still the same. You're going to develop a relationship with them focused on them, focused on adding value to their lives. But not only is it important that your goal is to add value to their lives, it's also important that you're able to communicate this. It's not enough just to be something. You've also got to communicate that you're that something. And so let's say you meet someone, you know, and it doesn't matter where it is. I don't care whether it's a Chamber of Commerce event. I don't care if it's a charity event where you've got a lot of very successful, affluent people who are supporting a cause. They're what we call successful givers. Not only are they great prospects, perhaps, but they're the type of people who, when they're your personal walking ambassadors, they can connect you with some great people. But it could also be at your PTA meeting for your kid. It could be the kid's ball game. It could be a regular social function or party. It's meeting someone and understanding that the first thing you're going to do is not talk about yourself and your business. You're going to focus on that person. And if you're networking, if you're prospecting, what have you, correctly, the other person is never for a moment going to feel as though they're being prospected. Now, there's nothing fake, false, phony, or manipulative about this. It's simply this. If you're doing it correctly, the other person is going to enjoy the conversation even more than you are enjoying the conversation. And when that's the case, they're always going to feel you are totally appropriate, in line, and someone they want to talk to. You know, I always say to people and this doesn't have anything necessarily to do with this group, but when I talk to groups about teleprospecting, and I say, you know, you've heard a million times you should talk 20% of the time and listen 80% of the time. Why? Two reasons. One is because when you're telling, you ain't selling. But the other reason is this. Nobody is ever going to hang up the phone on you while they are talking.
That's right.
And it's the same in a one-on-one conversation. When you are focusing on this person, they're never going to want to hang up on the conversation, and they're going to appreciate you greatly. You know, we've all heard the people we find most interesting are the people who seem most interested in us, and it's sort of a question I ask my live audiences. You know, have you ever been in a conversation with someone where they let you do practically all the talking? If so, didn't you kind of come away from that conversation saying to yourself, wow, what a fascinating conversationalist that person is? And it's the same here. You're going to be the fascinating conversationalist, and we're going to do that asking some very, very special questions.
Yeah, we're going to get to those questions in a minute. And, you know, you said a couple of things, Bob, that stand out, and I think what I'm hearing you say, you know, especially if you're networking and you are coming in contact with other successful business owners, affluent clients, or people that have, you know, that within their sphere have high-end types of potential clients, you know, your job isn't to go glom onto them and be the taker and try and milk that for all it's worth. Not at all. You go up to them and you add value to their life. You get them talking about themselves. You listen, you know, being interested in their life and their wants and their mm-hmm. needs in a genuine way mm-hmm. and developing that relationship where they know you, like you, and trust you.
Exactly.
So, and I know that people who are successful, people who are high profile especially, you know, they get a lot of that. They get a lot of people glomming onto them. And mm-hmm. how refreshing if you're the one that comes in and shows interest in what they're doing.
And well, no, that's exactly right, because what you've done there, and it's a great point, is you've totally repositioned, and you're constantly talking about positioning yourself as different from your competition. And what you're doing is you're totally repositioning yourself from being the glommer, the taker, into someone who comes with an asset of value about them. This person has the understanding almost from the get-go or from the give-go that you are a person who is going to add value, add what Wallace Waddles, author of the great 1910 book, The Science of Getting Rich, called adding increase to their lives.
And, you know, Bob, just by listening to them, even if you don't do anything else with them ever again, the relationship doesn't work out for whatever reason, the fact that you listened to them and made them feel special, even though no money exchanged hands or anything, that you just added value to their lives.
You have added value to their lives, and here's the interesting thing too. Even if this conversation goes nowhere, even if the relationship goes nowhere, you've actually, by adding value to their lives, you've added it to yours. Why? Because if you've been in a conversation one time where you were able to do that and effectively really listen to someone and make them feel good about themselves, you can do it again, and you can do it again and again and again. And so you're actually, without it even being the idea or the goal, you're practicing a really good habit.
I agree. Totally agree. You've developed 10 questions that you call feel-good questions. Explain what you mean by that.
Yeah, well, feel-good questions are, by their definition, simply questions that you ask during an initial conversation that are designed to just make this person feel good about themselves. They feel good about the conversation. They feel good about you. Now, this is different from asking the typical prospecty type questions, which can come across as intrusive to someone. So again, this is when you're first meeting someone, you've exchanged names with this person, you've asked them what they do, and they ask you what you do, and I'm going to suggest that you don't worry about having this big elevator pitch that's going to, that 30 seconds it's going to immediately get them to want to do business with you directly or refer you to others, because remember, when they first meet you, keep these three words in mind: they don't care. Okay, not yet anyway.
Okay.
And so you can give just a very simple introduction of what you do. I mean, very simple. But then go right back to that person and ask them about themselves. Let's say we're talking to Gary Malashevsky. Now, Gary is he's sales manager of an office products company. He's not high-end, but he knows a lot of high-end people, and he's going to soon be high-end. And so he's a good guy to get to know right now. And Gary Sub, basically sales manager of a company that sells high-end copying machines, and he's still out selling as well as being in management, working his way up. And so when we speak to Gary, let's ask him some feel-good questions that just make him feel good and give him the impression and a genuine impression that value is about to be added to his life. Now, I have 10 of these in my arsenal. You'll absolutely never have time to ask all 10. You'll have time to ask maybe two or three of those. Now, for those who would like to have all 10 questions, I'll give you a website you can go to very quickly. You don't have to fill anything in or download anything. It'll pop right up on screen. You just go to www.burg.com/10Q. So just the numbers 10 and the letter Q. .html, and you'll have all those questions.
Okay.
But anyway, the first question is simply, how did you get started in the so-and-so business, whatever you do, whatever he does? Gary, how did you get started selling copying machines? Or how did you get started in the office products business? Or, Sheila, how did you get started as a chiropractic physician? Tom, how did you get your start as a whatever it happens to be? Now, this is not a particularly clever or slick question, right? It is about the most mundane question you could ever ask someone. But people love answering that question. It's what I call the movie of the week question.
Yep.
you're actually saying to this person, you're implying, I find you fascinating enough to want to know your story. And very few people ask him, because most people are what? They're concerned with themselves. But you're right away letting this person know they have value. You want to know their story, and they probably want to tell you. In fact, I can't think of any time I've ever asked this question that the person didn't go into their story. And so we've got to actively listen and genuinely want to know. So that's first question. Can I give you one more?
Oh, absolutely.
Next question I would ask is almost sort of a follow-up to that. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Now, it might sound more like, you know, after he answers the first question, wow, you must have had some great experiences over the years. What do you enjoy most about what you do? Now, here's the thing about this, Jim. This question almost kind of flies in the face of most traditional sales teaching, if you will, where we're taught to immediately find this person's pain.
Yeah.
You know, right away, right? We're supposed to reach into their heart and just tear it out.
Problem, agitate, solve.
Right, so that we can come to the rescue with our terrific products. Well, here's the thing. There's a time and place for everything. And, of course, once there's some, you know, possible interest that they have, you might have to find their pain or help, you know, what have you. But that's fine. There's a time. But now is not the time. Now is just the time for them to feel good about the conversation, about themselves, about you. You want them afterwards, you're going to want them associating you with good feelings. And so you're just going to ask, what do you enjoy most about what you do? You know, imagine taking the opposite tack and saying to this person, so Dave, or, you know, Gary, tell me, what do you just hate most about what you do? It's like you might as well follow that up with, and while we're at it, how about this wretched excuse for a life you live? Because it's going to be the same result. They're not going to feel good about themselves or about you or about the conversation. So instead of finding their pain, let's find their joy.
Okay.
Now, let's say you've asked, and I'll tell you, if you meet someone at the next time you go to any kind of event, party, whatever, and you ask those two questions, you'll be amazed at how immediately that person now seems to respond to you. Now, once you've asked these couple of questions and you feel as though a rapport has been established, it's now time to ask what I call the one key question that will separate you from practically everyone else this person's ever met.
Fantastic. Lay it on us.
Okay, that question is, Gary, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Mary, I don't know much about your product line. I'm sure it's great. Tell me, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? Now, what have you done when asking that person that question? I see two things. One is, again, you've just, as you teach, Jim, you've just separated yourself from everyone else who's so eye-oriented, they just want to talk about themselves. The other thing you've done is you've said to this person, you've implied, I am about to bring some very high value to your life. Your life, your happiness, your income is going to increase by way of having me in it. Now, here's the other thing. You've also given this person an opportunity to tell you how to help them. So let's play this out a little bit. You say to Gary, who sells copying machines, Gary, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good prospect for you? And Gary has to think about it for a moment because he's never been asked that question before, probably.
Yeah.
He finally says, well, if you're ever in an office and you notice a copying machine, and next to that copying machine's a waste paper basket which is filled to the rim and just absolutely overflowing with crumpled up pieces of paper, that's a good sign that copying machine's probably been breaking down a lot lately, and that would be an excellent prospect for me. So Gary has just shown you how to add value to his life in a way that's very important to him through giving him referrals, through looking out for his interests. And that means a lot to him. That signals him right away that you are a person of value. Now, by the way, if people are thinking, okay, well, you know, good thoughts, but what if this person, again, we're talking, high-end people, what if they're not salespeople, though? What if they're CEO of a company? What if they're, what have you? That's fine. The same principles apply. You can always ask this person how they got started, what they enjoy most, and a couple of the other feel-good questions, but the one key question might be, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good contact for you? Or how can I know if somebody I'm talking to is someone you'd like to meet? I remember talking to one person, CEO of a company, and I during the conversation I found out his daughter had just graduated college, which, by the way, there are also other questions you can ask called form questions, F-O-R-M. F is to ask about their family. O is occupation. R is recreation, which people generally really enjoy speaking about. M is message, or what they deem to be important, certain causes they may be be involved in charities, so forth. But I remember asking this person, he had came up in the conversation, his daughter had just graduated college, and I asked, of course, you know, what she majored in and what she was looking to do, and he told me. So my one key question became, how can I know if somebody I'm talking to would be a good contact for Beth as she begins her career? Well, you should have seen his eyes light up. But, you know, you knew he was thinking, finally, one of these guys gets it, that I don't care about them. You know, I want to know, do they care about me and my family and my, you know. And so I ended up actually introducing Bill, who was the father, to another person who, in that, because I went through my Rolodex, of course, my contact list, my network, and Beth ended up doing an internship for this person. Now, this led down the line, certainly not that night, but it led down the line to me getting Bill's business and some very good referrals. So, you know, is it as easy as that? Yeah. Does it always happen that quickly? Well, no, of course not. But it doesn't have to.
Well, yeah, and you took that question, that one key question, how can I know if someone I'm talking to is a good prospect for you. Well, fill in that good prospect with anything that could be a need in their life.
Exactly.
Who is somebody who, like you said, would be a good contact for you, would be a good mentor for you, job opportunity for you. It doesn't matter. Just fill it in.
Exactly.
And you're also positioning yourself as a center of influence.
Yes, you are. Exactly.
And you know, you do this long enough, Bob, you will become a center of influence.
Well, and that's the key. You end up becoming that go-to person. You end up becoming that person who everyone looks at as, you know, the person that everyone knows and should know. And again, you're developing so many know, like, and trust relationships with so many different people, many of them of very high quality, that before long, you know, you've got that army of personal walking ambassadors, and that's really what you're looking for.
Well, you know what you can also do, too, is when you get their business card, is write that answer to that question on the back of it and let them see you do it. How can I know if someone is a good prospect for you, what have you? Write it on the back, put it in your Rolodex or in your business card holder, and then when people call you, you flip through it and you've got at your fingertips whoever it is that you need. You know these people, and you truly become that center of influence.
Yeah, and it's really simple to do. I mean, it's really being what I call a connector.
Yep.
And you know, being a connector is not something you really have to have a huge skill set on. It's pretty easy to do. Just look out for other people. If you come across somebody who has a particular need, want, or desire, ask yourself, who do I know? Who is in my network who could fulfill that want, need, or desire, and set them up?
It's really about having empathy.
It is. It's putting yourself in that other person's place. And again, it's